to the special live edition of Truth Jihad Radio. I'm your host, Kevin Barrett, doing this show live every week right here at freedomslips.com. That's the URL for Revolution Radio, the leading listener-supported network, breaking new ground, exposing new truths rarely heard in the corporate-controlled mainstream. That's pretty much my business, too, over at truthjihad.com. Tonight, we're going to be delving deep into hidden history, one of my favorite topics, with a couple of experts who go about it in somewhat different ways. First, our guest, Tim Silver, is the author of The People's History. That's his website. His book is Lifting the Veil, an investigative history of the United States pathocracy. That's right, the pathocracy, psychopaths in control. That word pretty well explains what's actually going on at the highest levels of power. And then in the second hour, we're going to talk to one of my favorite all-time regular guests, Preston James. Preston James has some kind of vague intelligence background that we really can't get into. But the long story short is that he is one of the most popular writers over at Veterans Today, and he tells hard truths about the corrupt syndicate running the world. He calls it the Khazarian Mafia, and he says that the big squeeze is now on the Khazarian Mafia, that these people are going down. So I hope he's right. We'll hear more about that in the second hour. Well, let's get going here on the first hour interview with Tim Silver. His book, Lifting the Veil, covers all kinds of great hidden history topics, from false flag terror, Operation Gladio, to the Phoenix program of assassinations, U.S. government assassinations of good guy leaders, including here in the U.S., Dr. King, Malcolm X, President Kennedy and his brother, Robert, et cetera, et cetera. COINTELPRO, the murder of Fred Hampton, MKUltra, continuity of government, or COG, CIA drug dealing, officially sanctioned pedophilia, as in the Franklin scandal and Franklin cover-up, trauma-based mind control, Project Monarch, the whole nine yards. This is a terrific resource, and it's even more terrific that Tim has put this online where anybody can read it for free. So you don't have to kick over $20 to read his book like you do if you want to read my latest book, Another French False Flag. Tim's book is just sitting there at his website waiting for you to download and read it. So it's very useful to have that information available at our fingertips today. Back when I was young, you would have to work pretty hard to get a hold of a tiny fraction of it. And people like Tim Silver deserve commendation for bringing this kind of information to the people. So, hey, welcome, Tim Silver. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thank you. Thanks for that introduction.
Yeah, well, I was looking at your book, and it's terrific. You know, when I started with the 9/11 truth movement, a lot of folks in that movement said, oh, we should never talk about anything except 9/11, and in particular, the scientific issues of, you know, controlled demolition at free fall acceleration with nanothermite and yada, yada, yada. And I was of the opinion that, well, no, I mean, we need to talk about all of these over-the-top crimes of the pathocracy, the psychopaths in power, and that's pretty much what you're doing in this book.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And 9/11 is something that I had put a lot of study and effort into and done some writing on, but I decided to leave it out of the book because there was, I guess so much other topics that I felt that people who were predisposed to be skeptical or antagonistic to these ideas could enter them, in an easier way.
Yeah, of course, it's not all that easy when you get into some of these horrific details of, you know, state-sponsored pedophilia where the Nebraska State Police, the FBI, CIA, Washington Post, New York Times, all the way up to the president and the White House, they're all complicit in horrific child sexual abuse. I mean, this kind of thing is in some ways almost worse than 9/11.
Right, absolutely. And I think that what I try to do in the first half of the book is really lead up to that that big thesis that there is institutionalized child abuse going on. It's being protected at the highest levels of government and intelligence communities. That's to say that to someone is shocking. So I start out, we talk about MKUltra and the early experiments into that kind of mind control and the history of the United States with terrorism, and really start with all these well-documented, I have a background in history. I got a history degree when I started writing this. So that's kind of the approach I took, was to be as thorough as possible, citing as many sources as I could. And then, you get to that point where that's the next step to address that this conspiracy really goes deep.
So you have a history background, and isn't Howard Zinn's book also called The People's History? And how does your project relate to that?
Yeah, I definitely feel like the name was inspired in kind of a tribute to him. Around the time that he passed away was around the time that I kind of woke up to conspiracies. And his book, maybe at a young age, paved the way for those ideas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was interestingly ambivalent on some of these issues, 9/11 in particular. I remember he was like kind of, one of these flip-floppers who's kind of, he's a supporter of the truth movement one moment, and then he's sort of going along with Chomsky's nonsense at another moment.
Right.
I guess he was getting pretty old by that point, like Chomsky. But he seems to be a very well-intentioned and generally a pretty good historian who has opened up people's minds to understanding just how bad things really are.
Right, absolutely. And one of the big things that stuck with me is I started to realize how out of touch and incorrect a lot of what I was studying at university really was, and how these alternative ideas and alternative sources out of the mainstream are oftentimes more valid and more more powerful. More people need to be talking about them.
Well, I agree. And that's my goal, is to try to extend the conversation and raise the level of it if I can, which is what I've done in these last two books on the French false flags of 2015. The first one was We Are Not Charlie Hebdo, which came out a little 2 months after that January 7th event. And then once again, I got this new one out, another French false flag. And that came out again about 2 months after the November 13th terror attack. And when I put these together, with a lot of help from a lot of really good researchers and internet investigators and polemicists and historians and journalists, the issue that becomes like, well, how do I do this in a way that's going to extend the conversation, bring in some people who maybe otherwise wouldn't see this material, and try to get them interested in talking about it, while at the same time trying to make sure that the overall level is pretty high, reasonably close to scholarly authenticity, decent sourcing, decent writing, all of that. But it's always a tricky business walking a fine line between writing for people who already know a lot of this stuff and trying to bring in people who don't.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And exactly what I had in mind when I first started writing. It started out as a blog before I kind of snowballed into a book. But I definitely feel that a lot of people out there, doing a great job bringing up a lot of good ideas, but the way the information is presented is not always beneficial to growing the conversation.
And it's inherently a bit difficult, or at least there are sorts of choices you have to make, and they all have their upsides and downsides. For instance, do we follow the Big Bang theory of marketing, which says that the best thing you can do is just to get people's attention by shocking them? And even if you alienate the vast majority of the people whose attention you grab, nobody's going to forget you. And that's actually what you want, whether you're selling soap or selling ideas. Now, that's the Big Bang Theory. And I think that's suited, quite well to this series of topics. These are such shocking topics that it's just natural to use them in that way. However, if you don't handle it right, you can shock people in a way that makes you sound completely crazy, and then they just write you off under this crazy conspiracy theorist kind of rubric, and so it hasn't worked. And so there's this other school of thought that says, no, don't shock people at all. Try very hard not to shock people. Be very, very reasonable. Sound very academic and understated and very, very careful. And, just stick to one topic. Just talk about 9/11. Don't talk about these other things. Or this sort of very, very cautious approach. And I think there's a place for all approaches, but frankly, I think this material is so shocking that you almost have to use that Big Bang approach.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, and especially when I'm submitting new information somewhere, you want to grab their attention. One of the first writing I ever did, it was titled "The Mountain of Evidence for a Global Pedophile Ring Protected by Intelligence Agencies," and that was just the title, the first thing people saw. And then
That sums it up pretty well.
Sorry, what was that?
That sums it up pretty well.
Right. And then I guess, started out slow and just built it up. But, at some point you do just got to grab people's attention.
Yeah. And so how did you get started with this? Were you still involved in academic history at that point? Have you had any run-ins with people in the academy or in sort of standard history modalities who have clashed with your approach?
Not necessarily. I actually woke up to conspiracies the very day after I graduated.
Well, that's good timing.
Yeah, it was perfect timing. I remember I was sitting at home thinking, what do I want to do with my life? I have a history degree, not exactly sure what to do, what direction to go. And then I was researching the Aurora, Colorado events, and that led me to David McGowan's writing, and that's what woke me up.
Oh, shout out to late lamented Dave McGowan. Mm-hmm. Great analyst. Yeah. And by the way, Tim, could you maybe turn down your volume on you're getting an echo.
Sure thing.
Okay, yeah. If you have headphones, that's ideal. If not, you have to kind of turn it down. But yeah, Dave McGowan, what a guy. I mean, he got 9/11 exactly right, like the day after it happened.
Mm-hmm.
You can't argue with that. Yeah, it took me 2 years. But yeah, so which of his books influenced you the most?
The one that really shocked me was the first part. I think it's divided into three parts, but it was The Program to Kill.
So that
was talking about child abuse rings and the cover-ups of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I haven't talked to him about that one. I had him on the show talking about his book about Laurel Canyon, Weird Things Inside the Canyon. About the hijacking of the 60s counterculture, or was it the manufacture of the 60s counterculture? You almost have to wonder how much of that counterculture was influenced by these dark forces.
Absolutely. I read that one shortly after, and it was really shocking just how in-depth, for this little subsect of what the pathocracy and this conspiracy is trying to accomplish, just a little sliver of it, and how in-depth it went and how much control the CIA or similar groups had in that counterculture.
Yeah, it was shocking to me because I grew up with that counterculture, and I thought that it was trying to shake off the pathocracy. I mean, it seemed to me that it was, I bought into sort of the naive narrative that we had this messed up establishment culture, which had gotten us into Vietnam and killed Kennedy and all of that. And then the young people started waking up to the potential of the human spirit and peace and love. And music became this wave of kind of a liberation. And, that was very formative for me when I was young. I grew up in Wisconsin in the 1970s, and here in the heartland, the 60s didn't really arrive until the 70s. So I was really kind of there. And very much influenced by it. So McGowan's work, I guess I'd already seen a few things that had raised questions about some of the counterculture, but McGowan's book really took it on. And, I'm still not 100% sure that all of his assertions would lead to this, all these guys who, for instance, came from military families and then got into rock bands. I don't think all of them were necessarily agents of the deep state. My theory would be that many of them might very well have been just, kind of rebelling against their authoritarian fathers. If Jim Morrison's father was the admiral who was in charge of the Gulf of Tonkin incident, Morrison apparently really hated the Vietnam War, and he really hated his dad. And so you could just theorized that he would become who he was without needing to be mind controlled.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's definitely interesting, you know, because some of this deep state is generational. You know, it's you're in it if your parents are in it. But to the other extent, that's a very valid argument. So that's why I haven't addressed that topic directly, because I feel like I don't have enough of a solid understanding of it yet, I guess.
Yeah, well, it's very tricky. You know, where do you draw the line between this kind of trauma-based mind control inflicted on children sort of programmatically and intentionally by people who have gotten it into a science versus a kind of just intergenerational cycle of abuse, which produces abusers, you know, but it's not like anybody really has planned it, you know? Like, it seems that you could interpret these things either way in a lot of cases. One example would be, you know, the interpretation of the Jewish circumcision ritual, which, of course, is also followed by about half of Americans circumcise their male children at birth. And according to one interpretation, which sounds somewhat plausible to me, this has very, very powerful, long-lasting effects. Bowlby has taught us that what happens to babies very, very early in life totally shapes their personalities in a way that practically nothing that could ever happen to you later in life could ever do. And according to this view, the kind of paranoia in which both Americans, you know, are subject to a paranoid hatred of foreigners and others, alienation from others, and the Jewish community as well. There's an issue with the goyim. There's been conflict with the non-Jews throughout the history of Judaism, and one sort of psychoanalytic theory of how not where it all comes from, but one influence on that could be that the baby is subjected to the mutilation of the most sensitive part of his anatomy right at birth, at the most sensitive time in his life. And there's this big, scary figure that does this to him. And that image gets locked deep in his consciousness, and it's always going to be there guiding his entire emotional rapport with the world. And what happens is that he doesn't know it was the rabbi. He doesn't know it was the representation of Judaism that did it. So he grows up with this unconscious terror of this other, this stranger, this big, scary stranger that wants to mutilate him and symbolically kill him. And then he grows up and it flips. And instead of it being, you know, the rabbi that did it, it becomes the evil goy that did it. It becomes the Palestinian that did it. It becomes the Nazi that did it. It becomes Hitler who did it. The other. And so the Jewish adult, male adult, has this horrific fear of the other. And that leads to a lot of pathological behavior that paradoxically actually creates others who get angry at Jewish people, you know, whether it's in Palestine, in Germany, or wherever. And so you could call this a kind of unconscious intergenerational cycle of child abuse producing abusive adults. And you could say the same thing about a whole lot of other practices that various cultures have towards their children. And so that's one issue. And then there's this other issue of the people that you're looking at who seem to have refined this extreme abuse, trauma-based mind control into a science.
Yeah, you know what? I had actually never thought about you know, that in the context of circumcision, but your argument makes tons of sense. You know, early childhood development and the subconscious are so powerfully influential in how people develop and who they are. And in a traumatic event like that, you know, it makes total sense. And and that's also at the core of the trauma based mind control and the child abuse. You know, they have it down to a science. You start a kid young, and you know they know exactly what they need to inflict on a level to have someone who's controllable. And then you can think about on a mass scale how they mold culture and I guess how they mold culture in a similar way to Laurel Canyon. You know, maybe there's a lot of subconscious things going on in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the role of trauma is so important here. When we saw that with 9/11, that's kind of how I got into this, was by looking at how 9/11 had traumatized Americans. And looks like, you know, you write a bit of a project on our show. So remind them.
Sorry, what was that?
Remind the listeners about Project Monarch Artichoke, these CIA programs that use trauma-based mind control.
Right. So, you know, it starts real early, at the earliest formation of the intelligence agencies right after World War II. They start out with Project Chatter, which is then upgraded to Artichoke, along with MK Ultra. And Artichoke in particular is really looking at trauma, physical and emotional trauma at a young age, or at an older age. But a lot of the test subjects were children, and how it affected them. You know, and then you go deeper into it, and they call it Monarch, Project Monarch. And that's really, a full-fledged trauma-based mind control program, where they take kids at a young age. You know, I've been contacted by people who say that they were, you know, as kids, they went away to these secret schools in the Northeast, where the right profile of student was taken into these programs, and they'd be abused and tortured, really. And coming out the other end of that programming, they were, you know, it goes pretty deep. I have the thesis in the book that it goes down to, they call it dissociative identity disorder, where people have multiple personalities, and under Project Monarch, they'd be able to program those different personalities and, you know, call them to the foreground and be able to really have full control over these individuals.
Well, when I interviewed John DeCamp many years ago, I did a series, three 2-hour interviews with him. So I did a total of 6 hours with John DeCamp. And he was the Nebraska state legislator who tried to bust the Franklin scandal. Larry King, the pimp who was pimping children to the highest level of power in the U.S., apparently, possibly including the Bush family. Meanwhile, Larry King, this pimp, this pedophile pimp, is singing the national anthem at the Republican National Convention. I wonder if they'll invite him back this year to do that. Probably not. Anyway, DeCamp told me that William Colby, who worked with DeCamp on this investigation, Colby being a former CIA director who died in a boating accident a while after this, he said that, you know, John, he said, there's no way that we can really take these people down right now. They're just too powerful. But someday, you know, God willing, maybe we can. And then he, according to DeCamp, if I remember correctly, he said that Colby said that there's some kind of weird psychic ability that these dissociated kids have. That is that these monsters who are inducing multiple personality disorder in these kids are taking advantage of that, not only to produce programmable multiple personalities who don't remember what the other personality's done, so they can be used as drug runners or assassins or what have you, but they also can be put into a dissociated state where they have psychic abilities. And so these people, you know, I don't know, telepathy, and I think what DeCamp mentioned was in particular precognition. They can see stuff coming down the pipe from the future, and that this appears to be possibly one of the ways that they've managed to avoid getting caught. And that struck me as pretty wild speculation, but it, you know, it kind of it doesn't strike me as impossible, given that we do have scientific evidence that precognition and other psychic abilities exist. The Ryan experiments demonstrated that in the 1950s at Duke University, and they've been repeated a zillion times ever since. So, you know, it does seem that these folks must have a lot of technology, of power, to be able to continue to do these things and not get lynched. You know, as Bush said to Sarah McClellan, you know, when she said, what would happen if people find out what you've been doing? He said, oh, they chase us down the street and lynch us. Somehow that hasn't happened.
Right. That brings up a lot of interesting points and ideas. And I get that pushback a lot from people where it's like, you know, your arguments are good. This is really interesting. But what it comes down to is I think this is impossible for so many people to be involved in a conspiracy that spans the globe. And, I guess I feel like there are two direct answers to that. And one is psychopathy and the nature of psychopathy. These people are a distinct other. They recognize it. They socialize amongst themselves. And then the second answer is very possible. These extrasensory experiences. I like to bring up an experience I've had recently. I work in the autism community, and I've actually been very blessed to work with some young adults who have some of these abilities, precognition, and one of the young adults has they call it synesthesia when you have a color associated with sound, but he talks about how he basically sees auras for everything. People's auras, you can tell when people are sick. You can tell what someone's mood is. These people with vast intelligence essentially trapped in these this autistic condition.
Wow, that's interesting. You know, and it's funny you mention that because what DeCamp said about these psychic abilities of these abused children struck a chord with me regarding my reading of Philip K. Dick. I wrote a master's thesis on Philip K. Dick back in the day. I think it was probably one of the very first academic theses on Dick. I think there might have been one or two before me. And now, of course, there are dozens, if not hundreds or thousands. And he wrote about this sort of thing. He wrote, for example, in Martian Time Slip about an autistic boy who is seeing everything that's going to happen, past and future. And the ironic thing about this was that in that book, Martian Time Slip, about this autistic precognitive kid, Dick himself showed precognition because he wrote this about a very corrupt colony on Mars that was run by the Plumbers. And the head of this mafia called the Plumbers was Richard Nixon. It was a character based on Richard Nixon. And he wrote this in 1964.
That's interesting.
That was even before Nixon created the Plumbers. And likewise, Philip K. Dick wrote that famous book, it turned into the movie. What's the movie? The one about the psychic kids. They're floating in sort of a special isolation tank. And, what's that called? Do you remember that one?
Sure. No, I'm not familiar.
Tom Cruise is in that movie. It's one of the, Philip K. Dick movies. But yeah, it's about pre-crime. That's the book where he introduced the notion of pre-crime, where using these autistic kids to look into the future, the authorities are able to see who's going to commit a crime and to go arrest them before they commit it. And of course, we're living in a pre-crime world today with, with the intelligence agency, the NSA, Facebook, all that stuff.
Right.
Yeah, what's it called? The name of that that book and movie is not coming to mind. But yeah, that's interesting that and when I bring this kind of topic up, there are certain hardcore materialist types who really don't want to hear it. Wait a minute. You start talking about psychic research and ESP, you're going to ruin your scientific credibility. Have you looked into this scientific debate about psi?
Not super extensively. I definitely got into the Stanford research experiments. I forget exactly what they were called. When I was researching a lot of the secret history of these intelligence agencies.
The remote viewing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then those programs were shuttled down. But I admit I have to do a little bit more research on that.
Yeah, it's a fascinating topic. I discovered it when I was young by reading the Encyclopedia of Philosophy's entry on ESP. And these hardcore British empiricists were forced to admit that it had been proven seven ways from Sunday that all this stuff really does exist. There's no other interpretation of the data. And today, of course, that's been proven even more thoroughly. And yet, for some reason, we have the same kind of taboo on talking about it that we have on talking about issues like 9/11, the JFK assassination, and so on. And it sort of makes you wonder if maybe somebody is monopolizing this kind of power. I mean, we know that all the big casinos in Las Vegas do have psychics. Every casino, every major casino has a psychic. Sheldon Adelson has his own psychic guarding his casinos from psychic cheaters. And yet this topic is going to get you nowhere if you try and take it up in the academy. All of your advisors will tell you, no, don't go there. This is worse than 9/11 truth. You know, is it just that people are scared by the, you know, maybe unconscious knowledge that they have these abilities and the fact that, oh, other people really might someday be able to read my thoughts and so on and so forth? Or is there some kind of conspiracy here? I mean, it does seem to me if somebody weaponized Psi, they would use it to make sure that nobody else achieved the same capability. And maybe that's why we have this wave of, you know, PR animus directed towards Psi. That's why nobody can study it, or you're going to get crushed by all of this hatred and fear. And maybe that's been manufactured to make sure that the people who are actually using weaponized Psi never have to face any competition.
Yeah, I'm definitely sympathetic to the latter argument there. In the MK Ultra chapter of my book, I detail how Dr. Ewan Cameron, who did a lot of the early trauma-based research for the CIA, ended up being the first president of the American Psychology Association. And he really steered the agenda from the get-go. And one of the main things that they were trying to do is to make the idea of hypnotism seem bunk and silly, when in reality it was one of the weapons they were exploring most in depth at the time. So, you know, that was 50 years ago. That's as far as my historical documents can reveal. But it's a trend that I see having been continued.
Yeah, and isn't that terrifying that Cameron, who was destroying people's brains, turning people into vegetables through massive megadoses of LSD, far beyond what the most seasoned tripper would ever imagine taking,
right,
coupled with constant electroshock treatments and then lobotomies. He turned dozens and dozens of people into basically vegetables and a lot of others into near vegetables. And this guy was the president of his professional association.
Right.
I mean, these shrinks, you know, obviously are completely out of their minds. They should be coming to us for therapy. You know, we're living in a really strange world, though. You start getting into this information and you realize, you know, the lunatics really are running the asylum.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah. Of course, some people would argue that psychopaths are not technically lunatics. It's, you know, there's that argument about what kind of disorder is psychopathy? What kind of research did you do on psychopathy for this?
So I definitely, I guess two main sources. One is Dr. Hare. He would be the preeminent researcher on psychopathy. He wrote some popular books, and he really details how people with psychopathy are born and grow up at a very young age without any empathy or positive emotion. And they recognize that they're different at a young age. And of course, they're generally smart enough to hide that condition. Now Dr. Hare's research was mostly done with the prison population, which makes sense because that's, you know, when you have an access to psychopaths, you're most, you know, where else are you going
to
go?
It's a lot easier to study them in captivity.
Right, right. And then he even admits in his own research that it's a subset of the population, and that a lot of psychopaths are community leaders. They're intelligent people who know how to not get caught. And when you combine that with his other assertions that these people are drawn towards position with power, that they enjoy abusing other people and hurting other people, it makes sense that a lot of our institutions are really saturated with psychopaths. The second book that influenced me a lot was you know, and I'm not sure exactly how to pronounce his name. It's Lobazewski.
That's as close as I can get.
Right. And he wrote Political Ponderology, which was detailing in the Soviet bloc how psychopaths consolidated power in the government and what kind of processes occurred to allow that to happen. And what I say in the book is that, you know, psychopaths in their groups act kind of similar to us in that we normally weed out social deviants and bad, evil people from our social groups the same way these psychopaths weed out good people and or just typically developed people with empathy. They weed them out from their groups. And over time, these institutions intelligence agencies or really anything involved in the government or a lot of private sectors are completely filled with psychopaths and they're all aware of each other's condition. They're all working together. It's just a network of psychopaths.
Yeah, that's such a frightening thought that, you know, it's hardly even exactly a conspiracy. It's just that if you have hierarchies in which empathy is going to impede you in your work, for instance, a killing-based hierarchy such as the military, or a lying-based hierarchy such as the intelligence community or the political world, you're just going to naturally have a lot of psychopaths rising to the top. And once you get enough of them up there near the top, and they all kind of sense, you know, who's who, that kind of explains a lot. I mean, explains how Lyndon Johnson could be president of the United States and just, you know, have his own hired assassin, his own, you know, Mac Wallace, his own personal hitman running around killing people, including his own sister. You know, you could have Lyndon Johnson, you know, pulling over by the side of the road in front of all the journalists with him and defecating in front of them, or, you know, exposing himself constantly to the people around him, you know, in the White House. You read this stuff and you say, wait a minute, this is the president of the United States.
Right.
But it kind of makes sense once you realize that you've got a kind of a psychopath's guild operating in the centers of power. And somebody who's not a total psychopath, like, let's say, Bill Moyers, who is going to kind of idolize LBJ. He's got that charisma. You know, he's a very effective leader. And, you know, he's kind of, you know, larger than life in more ways than one. And so Moyers is going to end up, like, with this kind of, you know, infatuation with LBJ, and he's going to spend his whole life not quite able to go there and admitting, you know, the complete evil psychopathy of LBJ and the entire system that produced him.
Oh, man. Yeah, and it becomes harder and harder to come around to that idea the more you invest in these typical ideas within the system.
Yeah, that's true. It seems like the people with the most to lose are the ones who are going to have the hardest time facing this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And aside from writing this book, I mean, what other kinds of activities have you pursued since you graduated, woke up, took the red pill?
Right.
where are you going to go with this?
About 4 months after I woke up, I packed my bags and I went to South America. And I was there for over a year. That's where I wrote most of the book. I spend most of it in Peru. I now have a Peruvian fiance. I've been exploring yoga and permaculture and some environmental issues. But mostly not on a political level, but you know, personal living and how to reduce and minimize my day-to-day involvement in the system, you know, spend the least amount of money, just trying to remove myself, from, you know, animal agriculture is another topic that I'm into. But, going forward right now, my plan is to write, version two of the book. I feel like, especially, I've been back in the U.S. for a little bit and I've been working with a lot of wonderful people in the autism community, and that's influenced me a lot. So I'm going to sit down now and write version two of the book, and after that, we'll see where it goes.
Very cool. Well, yeah. you alluded there to the end of the book where you explore solutions to this situation. And, of course, that's what everybody's really hungry for once they've taken that red pill and they've looked at this information and said, oh, my God, it's even worse than the conspiracy theorist said. What am I going to do now? Where do we go with this? And I think your answers are very much in line with the sensible wisdom of people who've been thinking about this for quite some time, which is like, yeah, minimize your implication, your involvement with these evil forces, starve them if possible. If we can all withdraw our support from these evil forces, ideally, you know, we would all stop using Federal Reserve funny money, and you know, we'd all grow our own food and so on and so forth. Look at our own media rather than Fox and all of that. But of course, it's not all or nothing. You know, you can reduce your footprint, many kinds of footprints, not just carbon footprints, but your media brainwashing footprint and your funny money footprint and all of these things. You can kind of step back and start, you know, starving the system without necessarily completely fleeing to the woods. And then you can help spread the truth.
Right, yeah. I'm not advocating people to go off the grid completely, although if that's what someone wants to do, then by all means, I support that. But, yeah, I mean, you know, step by step, reducing your footprint. And then the other big thing is raising awareness. You know, I think that's the biggest battle, is just getting more people to wake up. And at some point, a critical mass will be reached. I believe that pretty strongly.
Yeah, and that requires patience. You know, a lot of folks see this stuff. They say, wow, this is so outrageous. Something has to be done immediately. And then they start flailing. And after 6 months, they say, oh, my God, we didn't win on 9/11 truth. We haven't hanged Cheney yet. I can't take this anymore. And they give up. But it seems to me that we're really in this for the long haul. And so that element of saving the world by waking people up is something that you have to really be in for the long haul. But I think it has a lot of potential.
I mean, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I feel like I've seen a lot of positive differences in a lot of online communities since the end of 2012, when I was first starting to get into all this stuff. And, you know, the backlash from people antagonistic to the ideas, and especially online when you have things like the NSA's program of agents derailing conversations, it can get it's easy to get burned out in that kind of stuff.
Well, tell me about you know, this. What kind of derailing?
Well, I mean, if you go on any conspiracy forum, you know, everyone's going to be talking about shills, which I, you know, that's one of the things where when everyone just accuses everyone else of working for the NSA. When I'm not explaining this too well. Let me step back.
Well, no, I know what you're talking about. I've been saying this in the Truth Movement ever since I got involved back in 2004.
Right. So, you know, I spend a lot of my time on Reddit.com. There's a real big conspiracy community on there, and it seems that every subject, there's going to be four or five different people who will follow that subject and call everyone who considers that to be a conspiracy crazy. You know, they mock users, and it really creates a negative feeling in the community, and that's these are the type of you know, I guess you would call them sock puppets of the intelligence agencies, where they're deliberately trying to prevent discussions on conspiracies from being legitimate and from going more mainstream. They're doing their best to marginalize and turn the communities against each other.
Indeed, I'm sure there's plenty of that. Although it's sometimes hard to tell the difference between an NSA sock puppet per se and just some person who can't handle conspiracy theories. You know, I wrote a very popular article a while back. The headline was, "Scientists Discover Conspiracy Theorists Sane, Government Dupes Crazy, and Hostile." And it was some research done by some British academicians who had been studying conspiracy conversations online, and they found that the pro-conspiracy people tended to be less hostile, more tolerant and open-minded, and the anti-conspiracy people tended to be hostile and closed-minded. And they didn't really want to come right out and explain it that way, so I took their research and explained it that way for them. But the right, point is that some of these people who are always coming in and poo-pooing your conspiracy theories very well could be actual hostile people who feel psychologically threatened by what you're saying.
Right, right. Yeah, and that's the other thing. If it's not directly, you know, someone who's a part of the conspiracy or at least getting paid to derail, then it's someone who, you know, this psychopathy, this pathocracy has influence enough people to, you know, for them to take the initiative and be that toxic voice on their own.
Yeah, and of course this does have probably some effectiveness in keeping people away from these topics, because one of the most powerful motivational forces in humanity in general, and you sure see this in the academy, is a kind of a fear of public shame and humiliation, you know, a real concern with, you know, not wanting to be, you know, held up as a target of mockery and ridicule and vitriol, and not wanting problems, not wanting people coming after you and throwing rotten fruit at you. And this is pretty ubiquitous. And so all you need to do is make sure that there are a bunch of these people or sock puppets or whatever online who are going to come and throw rotten fruit at anybody who talks about these topics. And you're going to scare a lot of people away from them. And honestly, I think that this is why so many people who should know better, intellectuals, critical-minded intellectuals, a lot of them are not on anybody's payroll. You know, it's not that they have signed their soul away in blood or anything like that. It's that subconsciously they shy away from these conspiracy topics because they have been conditioned by seeing online conversations, among other things, that if they go there, a bunch of people are going to start attacking me and insulting me.
Right. I think that's exactly right.
Yeah. And of course, in the academy, it's the same way. You know, what professor wants to give up that comfort level of, you know, hanging out and, you know, getting along with their peers and getting respect from the students and expose themselves to the kinds of problems that could arise if you start looking too deeply into these things? Look what happened to Jim Tracy in Florida. I recently did an interview on his show, which should be broadcast soon. He can't talk about his case, but man, did they ever, you know, go after him? I mean, this is a complete academic lynching. He had tenure and they fired him. You know, I hope he wins a multi-billion dollar lawsuit. I don't know. I'm not going to hold my breath. Yeah, no, he actually might do okay, because the tenure thing is, you know, it's not that clear that they can just completely put tenure into the shredder and pretend it doesn't exist. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, it's discouraging that, like, you know, you say you went to school for history, but you probably didn't see a whole lot of this stuff there.
No, definitely not. You know, and I guess that's all I really have to say. I didn't experience it. My professors were all straight in line with the mainstream.
Mm-hmm. And how about the way that fiction has become a space where some of these things can be talked about a little more? I just wrote a piece at Veterans Today about the fact that the new X-Files 6-part miniseries is going to be partly about 9/11 truth. It's about a New World Order conspiracy theory involving 9/11 truth. That's kind of interesting. And then this, the most recent Dan Brown novel, talks about a mega corporation that basically just does really elaborate false flags for very, very rich people or for governments. So in fiction, in popular culture, these kinds of topics do get a certain amount of circulation. And maybe that's because the establishment doesn't mind that, because it sort of brackets it off as fiction.
Yeah, that's really interesting. You know, I'd actually just come across that yesterday, I think, the X-Files and the Dan Brown. And you know, I don't really know what's behind it, why it's separate, but I guess I don't even know what kind of impact it has on people. Does it being fictional make someone subconsciously associate those ideas with fiction, or would it have the opposite effect and make them think about it more critically? I guess I'm not sure.
Yeah, probably a little of both. You know, and I think like so many things, it sort of depends on the way it gets handled. It depends on the way people choose to react to it. I'm a literature scholar by trade. I just got into this nonfiction stuff because I was forced to when reality got much crazier than anybody's fiction ever could. And so I believe that imagination, creative production, fiction can help us understand things better. I think that they're tools to use for understanding reality. So overall, I'm happy to see that 9/11 truth is seeping into the X-Files. You know, I tried to get 9/11 truth on Fox when I went on Hannity and O'Reilly, and, you know, I think that maybe the X-Files will have better luck than I did.
yeah, but I agree, I guess. I think that's a good way to look at it.
Yeah. So how about the autism issue? That, you know, you raised that, and you know, you have some experience in that area, and I've followed this a little bit, or I've been kind of paying attention to the way that there is this sort of autism spectrum community growing up, and people are becoming proud of having certain kinds of abilities that ordinary people don't. You know, they're not just lacking in abilities that ordinary people have, but there's also there are things that people, you know, on that spectrum can do that others can't. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that community. I don't know a whole lot about it.
Yeah. So I, yeah, you know, it comes down to the nature of consciousness and what it really means to perceive our world, and how different that perception could be if you were in a different, in a different body with different abilities. You know, I've had this one young adult, nonverbal, but he's able to communicate through typing. And he, you know, he's talking about how,
looks like we may have lost connection with Tim, which is unfortunate. Oh yeah. Okay. I see what's happening. Are you back, Tim?
Hey, I'm good.
Yeah, you're back.
All right. Where was I cut off at?
You were saying that this has to do with the nature of consciousness.
Right. So, some of these kids, when they're describing how their brain works and how they think and how they experience their day, it's so profoundly different than a typically developing person it makes you think that or makes you wonder how many or how different experience can be, how subjective our day-to-day lives can be. This kid dreams, and he's completely aware during his dreams. He's able to move around and, I guess what a lot of people would call this astral projection, you know, that's his nightly routine. And just these really profound things that I'm still processing and synthesizing into my understanding. But it's really been eye-opening and shocking in a way that, you know, I think it's going to be a key to the future, getting these ideas and experiences sorted out a little more and out into the public. So I'm hoping to work with that to an extent.
Really interesting stuff. Yeah, that sounds like a frontier of consciousness research. Now, I've wondered whether, if autism is really a spectrum, you know, like so many things, like psychopathy, for example, it's really just a spectrum where you give somebody a psychological test and they would be somewhere on the spectrum, you know, and at one extreme end would be the total psychopath, and on the other extreme end would be the ultra compassionate person, the saintly person or what have you. And likewise with autism, you might have the same kind of spectrum. You know, we talk about the, you know, kind of extreme autism and then the high functioning autism and then shading off into what's supposedly normal, whatever right. That is. But, you know, maybe some of these qualities we associate with autism have a positive side, such as, for example, people who are not just wired into other people's emotional realities, right? If you are wired in to other people's emotional realities, so you're just reacting, you know, just instinctively, appropriately, emotionally with the people around you, well, that's all wonderful for being popular. But it might not be so wonderful if you're seeking truth in areas where the consensus emotional reality is keeping people away from the truth. You know, I've noticed in the truth movement, there are a lot of people who seem to be, you know, they'd score fairly high on that autism spectrum. They probably wouldn't quite make it and be categorized. But I think you almost have to be able to somehow step back from, you know, being just reacting instinctively emotionally with the herd, so that, you know, if I think about 9/11 truth, they are going to turn against me emotionally, and I will suffer bad emotions of fear and anger from the people around me. Like at some level, that's what ordinary people get, and that's what keeps them away from 9/11 truth. And you have to step outside of that to get it. And maybe people with a little tinge of autism are better at it. I don't know. Well, we hit the end of the hour, and it's been a wonderful hour. I really appreciate it. Tim Silver, author of Lifting the Veil, an Investigative History of the United States Pathocracy. It's a great read full of crucial information. Thank you, Tim. We'll be back in the next hour with Preston James from Veterans Today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's been great.
Okay, thank you. Welcome back to the second hour of tonight's special live edition of Truth Jihad Radio. I'm Kevin Barrett, talking about hidden history tonight. Fascinating topic. And in fact, we do talk about a lot of issues that are basically hidden history issues here on this show. But tonight we've got two very, very special guests, people who are ripping the veil away from the historical reality that you're not supposed to know about. And Tim Silver, I thought, did a great job there. I highly recommend his book. And in the second hour now, we're going to talk to another hidden history specialist who has virtually copyrighted the expression Khazarian Mafia. It's one of those memes that's gotten pretty viral, up there with false flag, which I wish I could copyright. I'm working on it. And pathocracy, this kind of thing. But Khazarian Mafia is really, I don't know if I ever heard that anywhere before I started seeing it in Preston's articles. And now a whole lot of people know what it means and agree with him. And Preston is putting out article after article at Veterans Today. And I think he's more popular than ever. He's owning several of the top positions. His latest piece is a very positive piece. It's called The Big Squeeze is Now on the Khazarian Mafia. And it suggests that it looks like the bad guys may be going down. They've been slowly going down for a while, but hey, now they're really going down. And when they do, it'll be partly thanks to truth tellers like Preston James. So, hey, welcome, Preston. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me on, Kevin. Appreciate it.
Good to have you back. Yeah, your stuff is getting more reads than ever over at VT. Is that because people are waking up? Is it because events are finally, you know, coming true? The stuff you've been predicting for years is really happening more obviously now?
I think all our articles are getting more reads. I mean, your articles, you have a huge following, and I think the reason that we're connecting is people are sick and tired of the status quo. They're catching on. You know, the internet in general provides instant access to hundreds of libraries. You know, they're digitizing everything. It's just unbelievable how much research is at a person's fingertips in minutes. And I think people are putting it together. They're connecting the dots, and they're hungry for it. And they're turning away from the mainstream media, the broadcast news, and they're going to the internet. And of course, as you know, the internet is filled with hundreds of shill type websites. But in order to get any credibility at all, they have to use what's called a limited hangout method, where they maybe put out 70-80%, 90% of the truth, and then try to throw in an important bad payload along the way to misguide people. But even then, it doesn't work, because people will just take the truth nuggets, the things that they know are true, and then connect the dots. So they would maybe take different truth items from different websites and construct them in their head and create their own sense of reality that's not dependent on any one website. Well, I think that works for an investigative journalist like you or for me, because people now have become independent thinkers. They're no longer cattle. They're no longer following the media. You know, 20 years ago, without the internet, people were really completely mind controlled by the media. Now they're independent, and they're starting to connect the dots for themselves. I think it's really a revolution in learning.
Well, yeah, I think you make a good point that this disinformation technique of supposedly planting 5 or 10% of bad information and 90% good doesn't work, because, you know, even people who are being sincere are probably going to be wrong 5 or 10% of the time. So we can't, you know, accept everything we read. We have to read critically across a wide range of sources.
Well, that's right. And as far as the Khazarian mafia concept, I will give Mike Karras, you know, who's an editor of VT, credit for that. He came up with that. But really, I think there's a major turning point in this battle against world corruption, and that happened at that conference, Damascus, December of 2014, when the team of Intel cowboys went over there from VT, the top directors. I'm not going to mention the names. You know, some of the people are a lot bigger than anybody has a clue. But these individuals went over there, and Gordon Duff gave this keynote address on the international conference in Damascus on combating terrorism and religious extremism. And he really sent shockwaves around the world, because he identified the true cause of all these terrorism as not what you would think. It's not religious extremism. What it is organized crime. And what they do is they mind control people. They prey on extremists. As you know, Saudi Arabia has had a history. They've had a lot of British oil money. And what they do is they, you know, for the last 30 years, they pick up street urchins. So from all around the Mideast, kids that are abandoned, and bring them and put them in training camps. And they start mind controlling them at 5 years old. And they're not, you know, they're not training them in Islam. I'll tell you that. They're training them in, you know, extremist type thinking. It has nothing to do with Islam at all, as you know.
Well, it's kind of the opposite in a way, because...
Well, it is. It's an abrogation of all this. But they're very good. These kids are raised at an early age, and to them, this way of thinking becomes their God itself. And so, and they actually, a lot of them are sleepers, you know, where they can be activated with certain code words and whatever. And they actually give them this idea that if they do heroic things, that they get so many virgins when they die, and all, and it sounds so trite, but they actually do use group hypnosis on them and drug them. And these kids are drugged and hypnotized from an early age, and they're trained up, to be suicide bombers and sleepers. And plus then they hire just the ordinary mercenaries. There's always been all kinds of mercenaries that will pretend they're anything you want. They'll dress any way you want. They'll do whatever they want as long as you pay them $1,000 a week. And, you know, this ISIS is nothing, as you know, but a mercenary army. That's all it is.
Well, yeah, they just had to cut their salaries in half because of the Russian success bombing the oil supply routes. And that's going to really ruin their effectiveness, because from what I was hearing, the main reason that they were the toughest, you know, fighting force among all of these Syrian rebel groups was they were paying four times as much as anybody else.
That's right. And, of course, I'd heard that in some of the places they were hit so hard by the Russian airstrikes that they were dressing up as women and trying to escape.
Yeah, I heard some of those reports as well. It is just pathetic how this ISIS group has been elevated to an image of Islam, you know, for people who, you know, just ordinary Western people who don't hear that much about any other kind of Islam. Every time some craziness happens, or Rita Katz stages a beheading in Hollywood or whatever and pumps it out, you know, this is what people get. And, it's really obvious that they're working against Islam, as we hear from a whole bunch of Muslims in this new book, Another French False Flag. People like Zayed Hamid, a top Pakistani defense analyst, one of the most popular television shows in Pakistan, is in that book explaining how there's been this phenomenon of fanatical Khawarij, he calls them, in Islam, going way back. And now they've been manipulated, they've been instrumentalized and weaponized by these anti-Islam forces tied in with Zionism. And speaking of Zionism, you're the expert on the Khazarian mafia, which is tied in with Zionism, and you just said in your new article that they're going down.
Yes, it's a sinking ship. I think what's happened is I think what's happened is and I will credit this to the information age. I really think the internet is the new Gutenberg press. Remember when Gutenberg press came out, how, you know, the Catholic Church did not want the believers to have the Bible, because if they read the Bible, which was written in Latin at the time, they found out that they were lying to them. None of the stuff that they were doing in their church policies was in the Bible. It was all perverted. And so they didn't want them to have the Bible. Well, eventually, you know, the Bible was translated. I remember when I went to a Catholic church service with a friend of mine back in the early 60s, it was all in Latin. I said to him, what the heck are they talking about? He said, I don't know. We just go here and, you know, act like we're worshiping God, you know. And but that changed. But the point I'm making is that even after the Gutenberg press, it still took hundreds of years to change these social forms and these social patterns. But now, of course, people read the Bible and they say, well, hey, this isn't Christianity. This isn't what the Bible teaches. Why are you doing this? There's nothing in there that says priests can't marry. There's nothing, you know, you can't eat fish on Friday. Where do you come up with all this crap? Well, they're coming up with all this crap because it's a political system to control people. It's the you know, the church was perverted in an early age. Well, it's like, you know, all these wars in the past between Islam and Christianity, you know that those are all manipulated by higher powers that want to destroy. There's a force loose in the world. I call it the third force, or some people say it's the people that run the Khazarian mafia, but there's an evil force in the world that wants no religions left. It wants to get them fighting against each other. They don't want any belief in God except for Lucifer. You probably heard this before, haven't you?
Well, yeah. And, you know, it's funny that you say that, because, you know, you've got the most read articles on Veterans Day. But last week on the show at the same time, Gordon Duff was ranting against religions. And I couldn't get a sensible word in edgewise.
Well, actually, overall, Gordon has had the most read articles, actually.
Okay. Well, yeah. Over time, of course, Gordon is
one by far. See, nobody can write like he does. He can get more communicated in a short article than anybody else. He has a gift for that.
Right. You know, but his views of the religion situation, like he agrees with us on so much of what's actually going on empirically in the world. But the way he frames it is kind of upside down from the way you and I would frame it. You know, we would agree that, for instance, 9/11 was done in order to set the great religions at each other's throats and destroy them by people who are satanically opposed to these great religions. Whereas Gordon doesn't seem to have much use for religions.
Well, see, he's very much aware that all the major religions have been infiltrated. And you know that there's been billions of dollars spent infiltrating Islam, Christianity, all of them. They've always got the Khazarian mafia has had a long-term strategy to infiltrate every single religion on earth and to try to get it discredited, get them to do things to discredit themselves. It's strange that it's the old idea of controlled opposition, but it's really a Bolshevik idea. It's a neo-Bolshevik idea, is they want to adulterate everything. You ever heard that before?
Oh, yeah. You can see it happening.
Yeah. And so, unfortunately, because of the amount of money and power they've had, they're able to, because they got control over the world money system back in the, you know, well, who knows how far back it goes, but it goes back to Venice, at, you know, at probably even the time of Rome. But they got control of the money system because of that. when they set up, you know, you know all the stories about how they set up gold exchanges, and people didn't want to carry their money around because they'd get robbed. So they turned the gold in, had secure vaults and whatever, and the bankers would keep it and then give them a piece of paper representing the gold. But what happened is they gave out more paper than they had gold, and that became a pattern. So once they figured that out, hey, we can just give out as much paper as we want, we can claim anything we want, then it went to, well, then we're going to charge people interest for using this paper.
So they're creating not just money out of nothing, they're creating exponentially increasing money out of nothing.
And as you know, that's illegal in Islam and in Christianity too. If you go by, you know, what the Bible teaches, so that's all. That was considered one of the worst sins in any of the religions.
You know, that's what I was preaching today in the Friday khutbah. The Islamic sermon I gave today was about riba or usury.
Yeah, it's considered one of the basic worst sins that there is, and because it's a cancer, is what it is. Well, of course, they got control over the money. And then they buy people. And as you know, in every major world religion, there's always people that will go for the money because money's concentrated power. It's work converted to a symbol, so that if you have money in your pocket, you can have things done for you. You can acquire things that you didn't necessarily have to work for. It's a shortcut to getting things without having to work for it. And so human nature being that it is, there are people that are corrupted. And so the Khazarian Mafia, their number one way of controlling people is through dirtying them up. The seven deadly sins, playing on their mortal nature, their sin nature, getting them to sin, giving them the denied pleasures without having to work for them. And then and especially think shameful things, too. And then, of course, the pedophilia traps, the honey traps, all these various things. People that move up the food chain in the Khazarian Mafia, if you ever want to get anywhere, you have to be tested. They have to dirty you up. You have to do things illegal so that they can eventually use that against you. Every major politician in D.C. that I know of, maybe except for one or two, Cynthia McKinney is one that they never could get anything on. I think Walter Jones is another one. Rand Paul, they don't have anything on him. I don't agree with some of his beliefs, but most of them are dirty. They have photographs of them involved with high-class prostitutes. Just remember that governor of New York that got caught with a high-class
prostitute. Spitzer. They took Spitzer down right when he was moving against the banks.
Well, that's the important thing. He was going to get the banks. You know, he was a real he had a history of being a prosecutor, didn't he? But he was he was quite a knowledgeable guy. He had the ability to take the banks down, just like the governor of Illinois was going to. He was cutting off some of the banks from dealing with Illinois. They were pulling crooked things, and that's when he got in trouble. You remember that?
Yeah, it was kind of the same scenario.
So they have these things in the can. Of course, on the situation with the governor of Illinois, he really didn't do anything wrong. They smeared him in the media.
Was it like Rod Blackovich?
Or something? Yeah. Well, whatever. I can't remember.
Yeah.
But he was a real character. He really didn't do anything really wrong. I mean, it was all conjured up. He was a politician. He was a manipulator and all that. But the funny thing is he really did give a darn about people of Illinois, and he did try to do something. And that's when they came down on him like a horde of locusts. Well, so all these politicians have dirty laundry, and the Khazarian Mafia has various cutouts that it uses. It has auxiliary. It uses, you know, the bankers, when they took over in 1913, got the Federal Reserve Act passed, they had all the money they wanted because they could just print it. So they had to come up with a plan, you know, to get money. And of course, passing laws to get federal income taxes raised. Get federal income tax in the first place was all part of their plan, going back to the Rothschilds. Got the taxes, so you can, and that's all. Federal income taxes are completely illegal. Even if they're a portion of property, they're still unconstitutional and illegal. Like, you know, federal agencies owning property and courthouses and state lands, all illegal. All these federal laws really, as you know, apply only to Washington, D.C., the territory of D.C. They don't apply anywhere else, but nobody knows that. And the United States itself is different. There's two United States. There's the real one that was set up by the founding fathers, and then there's the one in D.C. that was incorporated in 1867.
Mm-hmm. The founding fathers would be rolling over in their graves if they could see the stuff like the income tax. I mean, they actually did talk about this because the anti-federalists said that, well, you federalists, if you guys get the kind of constitution that you're advocating, where the federal government through its judiciary will be the judge of where its powers, you know, end and the state's powers begin, the feds are going to just take all the power. And someday there could be something as horrendous as a federal income tax on people. And the Federalists said, oh, are you kidding? Are you hallucinating? Nothing like that could ever possibly happen.
So now we have real estate taxes that are completely illegal, unconstitutional. You can't be taxed on something you own like that for owning. That's, you know, this is all Bolshevik crap. And this is all from the money crowd that came in. And, you know, when they can make money off money that they manufacture, fiat counterfeit money, which if you or I did, we'd be put in jail. But they do it. And not only that, they get interest off it. It's interest bearing. And they create these are mini debt bombs. Every little dollar bill in your wallet's a debt bomb. And they bombed us and the world into oblivion with the U.S. petrodollar. And the rest of the world's finally catching on and say, hey, there's no limit. They just keep issuing and printing them. And then they keep dumping it on us, and the value keeps going down. Now the dollar is worth 2.5 cents or so. Okay? Gordon Duff last week said that it was 2 cents on the dollar of what it originally was or whatever. But the point is they've debased the currency. Well, that's a crime in and of itself. So the rest of the world's catching on, Kevin. They're not putting up with it anymore. And that's why they've started the BRICS. They started the AIIB, Development Bank, the Silk Road System. There's hundreds of private trade agreements between countries directly without using the U.S. petrodollar, which, of course, was started in 1971 when Nixon finally took us off the gold standard completely, made a deal with Saudi Arabia and British Petroleum in the Mideast and said, hey, we will protect your countries with our military force if you only accept a payment for oil in U.S. petrodollar.
And not only that, we're going to let you jack your prices way up, too.
Hey, there you go. And then you'll be rich and you can live like kings. Well, guess what? They became very arrogant. So here's what really done them in. And I will say Mike Harris figured this out. Mike is a thinker. I get a lot of information from that guy. He's an absolute total genius.
Another Veterans Today stalwart.
Oh, yeah. He's probably the smartest person I've ever known. So he writes, you know, we write this article, but he comes up with this idea. And see, they were threatening the United States, Victoria Nuland and all these Khazarian mafia types went to Saudi Arabia and said, listen, we want you to lower the oil price. We got to squeeze the Russians out. We got to put them out of business. We're going to surround them. We're going to put them out of business because they're getting too strong. They're getting too big for their riches. So we're going to put them back in their proper place. So you lower the oil price for a while and it'll crush them and then you can put it back up. So just do it for a while. So Mike Harris came up with the original idea, you know, gee, what would happen if the Russians said, hey, we'll go one further. We'll lower it even further. We can play your game, too. So we put that in an article. And within a couple of days, now maybe it's a coincidence, but I doubt it. Putin, they lowered the price of oil. And nobody saw that coming. Saudi Arabia went into an absolute panic. And they lowered it even more to beat the Russians because they wanted to up their production to make for the lost revenue. So they've kept lowering it because they're trying to sell enough oil and increase their production to cover this lost revenue.
That's pretty smart on Russia's part because Russia has a lot of things other than oil, and Saudi Arabia doesn't.
Putin, I hope he's for real. If he's not, he's done a real good job fooling all of us. But the guy, you know, he's got the world's best advisors right now. It's politically astute people. And he sits in these rooms with the advisors and they go through all these different scenarios. And everything they do there is completely thought out, just like a chess game. If we do this, what's going to happen next? This, months and years ahead of time. And they're very crafty. They're very careful. And, when they lowered the price of oil, that was like taking a wooden dagger right through the heart of the vampire. So now the oil business is in real trouble. Some people are saying, well, maybe the large oil companies did this to get rid of Saudi Arabia, knock them down a few notches. Maybe they're trying to get rid of the privateers up in North Dakota and the shale industry and all this to try to get control, because eventually they'll probably raise the price up. But other experts say, no, that's not true. The consumption has been dropping because all this concern for gas mileage and stuff, and the price is artificially inflated, and now it'll never come back. Crude oil is always going to be cheap. Plus, we have right now five major nations that are very close and have free energy. I am sure you've heard this, and they're trying to roll it out now. And there's one or two countries in particular that are trying to roll it out now. You know that Iran has it, don't you?
Yeah, you know, you're talking about the Keshi.
I don't know about Keshi. Here's the thing. Keshi's had a strange relationship with the Russians. And afterwards, they have all this high tech stuff, all this high tech electronic stuff nobody else has. Keshi may be playing a dual role. He might be pumping out stuff to the public and coming across as a charlatan to create false cover for the real stuff. I suspect that Keshi, there's a lot more to him than what he wants anybody to know. That's just my own suspicion.
Interesting. But you think there is a big time, you know, free energy black swan coming in? I actually heard this on National Public Radio of all places.
I heard that they have it in Iran right now. They have it, and Russia has it too. And Japan had it too. And that's why they set off Israel set off that nuke in the seabed, you know, caused the tsunami and wiped out the nuclear power plants there.
Fukushima, yeah.
But yeah, put Stuxnet fires in it because the Japanese had two things. They had free energy coming, and they also had a car, that a hydrogen car that ran on water. It was very close to production. And basically they were just told that, right now we've annihilated 1/4 of your country. And if you want the rest annihilated, just keep it up. So, 1/4 of Japan's lost because of that tsunami. You know that, don't you, the radiation?
Yeah. It's horrible. How could they be doing that and then accepting that, well, we're going to get this free energy anyway? From what you're saying, it's coming down the pipe, and that makes sense. That would be why Saudi Arabia would be willing to pump oil like there's no tomorrow, because there won't be a tomorrow for energy at decent prices. Obviously, if peak oil were true, if the conventional reading were true, the Saudis and everybody else would want to keep a lot of oil in the ground because it's going to be worth a lot more tomorrow. But no, they're pumping it as though it's going to be worth nothing tomorrow. And maybe that's because that's it right. is.
Oh, it won't. Of course, as you know that hemp oil is, and there's other kinds of plant oils that are better than mineral oil. You know that, right?
Hemp oil, you got to grow the hemp. And I haven't seen the economic studies on that.
They don't really need mineral. Mineral oil, the biggest use right now of mineral oil is actually, I think this is 60% goes to plastics and other things.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, gasoline and oil, that's not the majority of it.
Yeah, well, I know in Iran they were saying that they want to end their oil exports completely and do nothing but value-added stuff like, manufacturing plastics and all the things you make out of oil.
Right, but you also know that now they have new ways to make oil out of plants. So, the mineral oil, it's going to come down to cost. I mean, probably the greatest thing that the Midwest farm states could do would be to grow massive amounts of hemp. Because it makes quality clothes. You can make car fenders out of it. You can build homes with it. It has all kinds of medicinal value. Marijuana is only one type, but hemp has no drug value, of course, but it has tremendous value far as food, as far as clothing, rope, all these various things. It's a huge mistake to not have it legal. You know that.
Oh, yeah. That's I absolutely agree with that. Well, what's going on with the Baltic Dry Index and the drying up, as it were, of world shipping? I mean, you would think that if the oil prices are crashing through the floor, that the economies would be revving up because there's all this nice free energy flowing, and you'd think there'd be a lot of shipping, a lot of consuming, but it's not working out that way.
Well, this is very hard to get at this, but there's intel reports, there's secret reports inside the intelligence agencies and in the United States and other countries that China is very, very angry because back in 2013, there was a G20 meeting and the G20 agreed, the 20 leaders representing these nations agreed to a big financial reset, which was to stop using the United States dollar as the reserve currency for the world and have it no longer be linked to petrol and have it as a one currency out of the rest of them in an exchange basket so that the Chinese renminbi would be elevated to the same status as the dollar. And I think other like the German mark too and British pound, but all a basket of currencies so that there would be some central council that would set the values or whatever in a fair way based on certain various factors. And so that agreement was made. But of course, as you know, when has the United States ever kept any agreement they made? I mean, so it, basically what China just said
is, ask the Indians.
Apparently what's happened is that there has been some kind of edict. We don't know where this came from, but the Chinese companies, the private companies, and many of them are probably owned by the Chinese military. They drastically reduced their shipping. So the Baltic Dry Index is way, way down. There's one report that nothing last week even moved in the Atlantic and or any of the Chinese shipping, which is a majority of the shipping, or in the Pacific either.
But wait a minute. The Atlantic is between the U.S. and Europe. That shouldn't be dependent
on China. But the Chinese still control a lot of that shipping. Mm-hmm. And it could be that the European, the shipping companies, it could be that everything is on hold. See, nobody wants to talk about it. You really can't get the information. The only way you can get it is talking to people in the ports. The people working in the ports have said there's drastic reductions in the amount being unloaded. So what this means is that unless the United States starts honoring this agreement, this reset agreement, we're going to probably see one way or the other, the prices in the stores of imported goods probably are going to keep going up. If they honor the agreement, they're going to go up because the dollar is going to be devalued periodically, or, you know, increasing each month, probably for a period of time until there's some kind of readjustment, because the dollar has been kited way up there based on the system.
So does that mean all the plastic junk in Walmart is now going to be luxury goods?
I know. Well, I think Walmart's already announced a lot of store closings because of this. And I think we already.
So it wasn't Jade Helm.
Yeah, you're already seeing a lot of prices rising, you know. So I've had some individuals tell me that don't be surprised if we had a price increase of imported goods 20% in 1 month and then 20% the next month. Wow. And maybe even more after that. Now, that would, of course, that would be good in the long run, maybe, because this free trade has pulled all the jobs, you know, all the manufacturing and industry out of the United States and would force it to come back.
And by American.
We need a government, a president and a Congress that will start putting American first instead of being owned by all these foreign lobbyists. The United States is nothing but a province of Israel, as you know.
So what do you think about Trump beating his chest and talking about putting America first? You know, I think that's part of why a lot of people like him. Do you think he's for real?
I know somebody, I won't mention his name, but he used to go into Trump's office once a month, knows him. And I called him up and said, can you tell me anything good about Trump? He said, yes. Can you tell me anything bad about him? He said, no. He said he liked him because he's called him a stand-up man. He said he's the kind of guy, if he gives you his word, it's going to be done. He never goes back on his word. He always does what he says he's going to do. It's as good as gold. It's like writing it in a contract. If he says he's going to do something, he does it. If he has to stay overnight or stay at work for a week, he will get the job done. And of course, he inherited, I think, $8 million from his dad, who was a contractor and took over his business. His dad was a respected contractor, but Donald Trump always got the job done. People liked doing business with him because they could count on him. There was no games. No, he never cheated anybody. He never added on to the prices. If he made a deal, it was a hard deal, but it was a fair deal. And then he got it done. And people like that. They like him for that reason. So I think the American people are sick of all these wishy-washy, crooked politicians, and they're hoping that he's legit and that he would handle the presidency the way he's handled his business. And the people that work for him like him. He has a reputation for being a tough boss, not keeping people around that don't work. But those that do work are very, very well rewarded and treated really well.
So how do you interpret the paradox that the Zionists and the neocons really seem to hate Trump, but at the same time, Trump is going even further than them at demonizing Muslims and saying we're going to lock the Muslims out and all this kind of stuff?
Well, yeah, you wonder, you know, you would think that they would like him. The Zionists would
like Preston?
Can you hear me?
Lose Preston James here. Let me see.
Can you hear me?
Hello, Preston. You still there?
Yeah, I'm here. They cut me.
We may have lost the connection here. Preston James, hopefully he's come back.
Let's try it again.
Just like we lost Tim Silver for a brief moment in the first hour.
Can you hear me now?
It was interesting how that happens.
How about now?
And I play with my equipment here just to make sure it's not on my end. I don't think it is. I don't think we have Preston there. Let me see if I can pull him back in.
Okay. Shows me I'm on.
Hello, Preston.
I'm here.
Are you there?
Yep. Can you hear me?
Okay. Well, I'm typing typing and talking at the same time, like Tim Silver talked about.
Okay. Try it now. How about now? Can you hear me?
Okay.
Can you hear me?
He says he's experiencing some kind of technical difficulties where Skype indicates he's away when he's not. Okay. Maybe I'm going to have to reconnect. Okay, I'm going to reconnect.
All right, how about now? No?
Mr. James. I don't know if it's the Khazarian Mafia that's messing with us or what. So here we go. I'm going to see what I can do to fix this. Wait a second. I'm having some kind of jam in my Skype as well. So here we go. I'm trying to reconnect here with Preston.
Okay,
James.
Can you hear me now? Back. Can you hear me?
It's supposed to be back.
You can't hear me, huh?
Oh, Preston.
Okay, nothing, huh?
Huh.
Okay, let me reboot.
I don't know. Maybe the Khazarian Mafia doesn't want us talking about Trump. That seems a little odd. I've never heard of any good reason why that should be the case. But, well, in the meantime, until Preston's voice returns, let's see. Maybe I can talk a little bit about his recent article at VT on the Hazarian Mafia going down. There we go. Oh, okay. I'm hearing, maybe I'm just not hearing Preston. Hello? Huh. Okay, I have a listener telling me he can hear Preston, but I can't. Maybe it's my end here. Jeez. Well, maybe Preston should just talk for the rest of the show. Because I don't know what else to do. All right. Well, maybe we could try and bring in somebody else here. Okay, I'm being told that Preston is audible. And maybe I'm being told I'm audible too, but I can't hear Preston. Can't hear anyone else. I have a listener here who's telling me that Preston is still on the air. Somehow I can't hear him. Hello, is this Danny?
Yeah, it is.
Okay, I can hear you. Are you saying you can hear Preston?
Absolutely. Absolutely. He was on and you couldn't hear him.
How bizarre, because I hear you just fine.
Yeah, I heard him, I heard you, and you could not hear him. And I think he could hear you, but you could not hear him.
Oh, there okay, he is. Like that. He's back. Can you hear me now? Yeah, I hear you.
All right. Great.
Yeah, they cut us off. The old fusion center. Yeah, and here's the thing is I have nothing bad to say about Donald Trump. I mean, he might be a phony and all that stuff, but so far I can't get anything. I tried to dig up dirt on him. I did everything I could, and I couldn't get anything negative on him. Other people don't like him and stuff, but I think the American people are so sick of all the BS and everything, and they sense that this guy dares to speak, you know, about the political machine, and he's going after all these people. And, yeah, it is a mystery that the Zios don't like him. It's very strange to me because he talks tough like, you know, got the Muslims, and he talked about, Iran, when they ran, got the seized funds back as though we were giving them aid. It's possible he's just playing a big game, and when he gets in there, he will try to do what he can to get American business back and get it going. That wouldn't surprise me. As far as the rest of the stuff, there are indications that he likes Putin. There are indications that he wants to get along with Putin, and he sees Putin as a businessman to do business with, not as someone to fight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and all that sounds fairly promising. Yeah. Sometimes he professes his undying love of Israel and stuff like that, but then at the same time, at one point, you know, my wife pointed this out to me. I had missed this. It was, a month ago or something in one of those debates. He referred to Netanyahu as a madman with his hands on nuclear weapons.
Well, that's right. He knows. But I think Donald Trump, he doesn't care about Israel either way. He figures if they want to do business with us and mind their P's and Q's and stay out of our politics, he'll treat them fine.
What do you mean stay out of our politics? You mean get out of our politics?
Well, yeah. But I mean, I think he doesn't mind doing, he'll do business with anybody. That's the way he is. He's more concerned about building business than he is about fighting war. He wants to transfer all the American business into real business and manufacturing and state-of-the-art stuff and not into fighting wars and defense. That's just the way it is. He wants strong defense, but I think he wants to turn the United States into, you know, he likes to build big buildings and big successful businesses, and I think that's what he wants to do in the United States. And, you know,
that might not be such a bad approach.
No. And he hates the idea of welfare and people not working. He wants jobs for everybody. He wants everybody to work. And, of course, you know that's what got Martin Luther King killed, don't you? Is he was anti-war and he was also against welfare. So he wanted jobs for the black community. He wanted self-respect and jobs, and they hated him for that.
Well, he was going to lead 500,000 people to D.C. to demand an end to the Vietnam War
and
poverty.
That's right.
I don't know if I would necessarily see Trump as in that mold, but I mean, I hope you're right. I do think that it's in a way a positive sign that the American people are responding to these guys like Trump and Sanders that the media says are way outside the box. They're bad. You shouldn't even think about those people being president. And of course, everybody is thinking about it.
Well, you know, Bernie Sanders, he he's not my choice of candidate, but, you know, I've looked to see if I could find dirt in his past and stuff. Yeah, he's had a few family working for him at times and stuff, but there's no skeletons in the closet with the guy. They got nothing on him, you know, and yeah, he's Jewish but he also, I think he's an Americaner first. I really do. I think he's a decent man. I've not been able to find any dirt on him.
Well, my only sense of his weakness would be that he's a bit of a compromiser, sort of like Obama, that he has this sense of what's politically realistic and feasible, and that's what he sticks with. Now, right now, he's, of course, you know, trying to stay to the left of Hillary, so he's talking big. But if you look at his record through the past, he hasn't been one to really push the envelope. He generally he plays ball with the powers that be. And that's, you know, I would be concerned that he might end up being just kind of another Obama in terms of, you know, talking a good game about peace and all of that. And then he gets into office and just keeps rubber stamping the drone attacks.
Well, that's right. But it all depends who he gets for advisors, too. One of the things about Trump, he has a history of getting the best. Like if he's going to, you know, build a building, he'll get the best architect. If he's going to have concrete board, he'll get the best guy to do it. You know, he's quality oriented. I like that approach. So I just hope he's for real. And I know so far it looks like the establishment's really becoming more and more afraid of him. So
yeah, my concern about him would be that, you know, I would question, does he really have like bedrock moral foundations to stand on, or is he mainly in it for himself? And if he's in it mainly for himself, he could end up making the wrong compromises and really mess things up. But if he does have any kind of moral foundations, which I don't see it a whole lot at this point, but maybe they're there, and you know, I don't know. We'll see where it all goes.
Yeah, I think with him, the strength is that he's a businessman. He knows how to do business, and he wants to turn the United States into a business that works. Now it's not working. I mean, you can't keep printing phony money and spending more money right now. What they're spending 40% more than they take in. You can't keep doing that.
Oh, we're a very successful business, Preston. We're exporting vast amounts of worthless green paper and death.
Well, that's right. As a business accountant, I think it's very successful, but I think he's right about it. So yeah, if he ran the United States as a business and really balanced the books, yeah, that might be a good starting point. I think, the reason that he is getting so much support is he's a populist. He's playing to increasing the spontaneously emerging populism. Every time you have, penetration from the internet, you get populism that follows it. It was the same with the Bible when the Gutenberg press, as the Bible spread around, it was real good for Christianity.
Well, wait a minute. Let's go back to what you were talking about earlier about the Gutenberg revolution. And you were comparing that to the situation in the Islamic world. But, you know, there's another way of looking at it that's kind of diametrically opposed to what you were saying, which is that the Gutenberg revolution led to the wars of religion because it let everybody interpret the Bible any darn way they wanted. Now, before that, the specialized priesthood working in Latin was made up of intellectual savants, and they could kind of, you know, keep their control over it. But once it got out and the genie was out of the bottle and anybody could interpret the Bible, yeah, sure, you got some perhaps improved interpretations, maybe, but you also got a lot of really wacky interpretations, like these people, the Calvinists, saying that, almost everybody is damned to hell, and there are only a very few elite who are saved. And how do we know who those people are? Well, they must be the people that God is favoring. And who are those people? The rich people. Therefore, the super rich people are the ones going to heaven. Therefore, we're all going to try to get super rich. And that led to the, you know, Protestant accumulation.
Oh, sure. And of course, all that crap is pulled out of context. As you know, masters of deception, any religion in the world, they're able to pick and choose and pull things out of context. But all these wars, the wars with Islam, the Crusades and stuff, were all manipulated by the financial power, as you know.
Right, but that didn't end with the Gutenberg Revolution. On the contrary, we got the wars of religion, which were a direct result of the Gutenberg Revolution, as all these different sects said, oh, this is what the Bible means, and they would go out and kill the other sects.
Wasn't it because, I think it was because Christianity was hijacked. That's what I think. I wouldn't necessarily blame on the Gutenberg Bird Revolution. I would blame it on I would blame it on mind control, how they mind control people. As you know, the good, they use the press to play to the masses, and but really it came down to money. All these wars were only possible because these banking families were financing them in order to get interest and gain more power.
Yeah, that's right. That's all wars are bankers' wars, because war is the ultimate way to force governments deeply into debt. And right. You got compound interest. That means that, you know, who's ever lending the money at those levels is going to run the world. And that's, of course, the world takeover plan of the Khazarian Mafia, the New World Order, whatever you want to call them.
You got it.
Yeah. But you think they're kind of, you know, up against, you know, we're between a rock and a hard place right now. So you think this currency reset is actually going to happen, and we're going to get a basket of currencies, secret agreement happening?
It's already happened. See, the thing is whether our government admits it or not, Russia and China are doing direct trading deals. There's a number of countries that are doing direct trading deals on their own without the public even knowing about it. They're already doing it. And it's a revolution, and they can't stop it. And the United States is going to be forced into a corner. That eventually the Khazarian banking system is going to be crushed. It's going to be irrelevant, and we're going to have to go to real money. There'll be a fake dollar for a while. A new dollar will be fake for a while, but eventually it'll all collapse. Yeah, I think the Khazarian Mafia is on the ropes. I think there's another third power behind them. They claim their god is Lucifer, and I think they're telling the truth. And what, you know, they're trusting him. They've had all these promises made to them that if they do all these things, they'll have all the riches and power and all this stuff. What they don't understand is that if you trust evil, it's going to turn on you. Now, the minute they're no longer needed for the New World Order system, and the New World Order system is only a stepping stone to something new. And the minute they're no longer needed, they're all going to be cut loose. And that's happening right now. They're all going to be cut loose. And they're going to be very shocked and confused by it, because they thought, well, you know, Lucifer, we served you. We did all this stuff. And now how come you're not protecting us? And he's not going to appear to them anymore in their little seances and their human sacrifices. He's going to be gone from them. And then the world's going to close in on them. And that's what's starting to happen. And there's a new system that's coming to play. There is going to be a rising power, an antichrist that's going to come. And in order for him to gain power, it has to be a populist thing. He has to claim that he's the Messiah. He has to create an image of himself that everybody thinks he's God. He's Jesus. He's got to come as though he's filled with love. He has to do all the right things. He has to eradicate all the evil. He has to take down the Khazarian Mafia totally, right down to the bottom. Each single person must go down. He has to clean everything up. People are going to worship him. They're going to think he's God. And then once he gains power, he's going to unleash a Luciferian system that's not going to be exactly what they hoped for. That's what I think is coming.
Really? Now, how do you see this this Antichrist figure emerging? I mean, from who would this be? Would this be like a world leader or somebody out of a particular country or what?
I think it'll be a world leader. I think it'll be some very, very charismatic type person that will appeal to everybody. He's going to be so magnetic that he's going to come in. He's going to provide electronic solutions to the worldwide economic problem. He's going to come up with a new system to buy and sell, you know, and then the Bible talks about you have to have the mark of the beast and all this. The mark of the beast will not be an electronic mark. What it is actually, that's a complete mistranslation. When it talks about the mark of the beast on the hand and the forehead, if you go back to the original language, what it actually means, I met a guy once that was a Bible expert. He was from Greece. He spoke Greek, but he knew the Bible in Aramaic, Greek, and Latin and everything. And he told me that was all a mistranslation. He said that what it really meant was that the mark of the beast on the hand would mean that you work for the beast with your hands, you labor for him, and the mark on the head means you believe in him. So you have to work for the beast and you have to believe in him. So the new world,
I always thought it was the, you know, getting microchipped.
No.
Or maybe the barcode.
That isn't it. It'll be you work for him and you believe him, like the typical Fed. You know, you work for Homeland Security. In the future, when this monster takes over, who's going to be very, very personable, people are going to love him. He when he puts in the new system, you're going to have to get down on your knee and take an oath to him. And if you don't, you won't be able to buy or sell in his system. You have to be in your own system or something else. But people want to be in his system, but they will have to take an oath to him, and they will have to renounce any other belief, Islam, Christianity, you name it. They have to take an oath to him.
Hmm. Now, could it be possible that this new ruler, this Antichrist, could be maybe an intelligent supercomputer?
Sure. It could be anything. AI. And have you ever thought that maybe AI is already running things?
Well, I've wondered about that. I think I've seen you speculate about this. And
it actually, it's running all our communication now. They transferred everything over. There's all these quantum computers, like, you know, about the Bluffdale business. And Bluffdale is, that's the one visible, but underground there's a bigger one. And then if you go over 75 miles away to Richmond, there's an alien base underground where they have even a bigger one. So really, all our communication systems worldwide are being run by an alien computer system. And nobody really knows what it is because it's all top secret and compartmentalized. There's probably only three or four, you know, humans that know what it is. And the reports we're getting is that it's not in our best interest. So there, you know how the cell phones now, all the problems with cell phones, and you have trouble hearing with them. They can actually, it's so sophisticated now, they can actually substitute words. So you can be talking to somebody, they can change what you hear. I've had phone messages where someone left me a message for a time and a date, and it was wrong. It was actually changed from what they said, morphed while they spoke it. And I knew it. I had written it down when the message was being taken. When I played the message back, it came back differently. So, I mean, I wow. know what they can do.
That's, you know, wild.
They can fog. They do what's called a fogging procedure. So you're talking on the cell phone, you know how it gets a little fuzzy and you can't hear the person, and they can do all these things.
Well, they did. They certainly took your voice away from my headphones there for a while. And apparently Danny on the other end of Revolution Radio could still hear you, and I couldn't.
Well, they don't want to say anything about, because the Kazarian Mafia, for whatever reasons, is scared to death of Donald Trump. Now, may not, you know, he might be 75% on their team, but
so we spoke the word Trump, and they cut you out.
Oh yeah, they're really frightened of him. I've never seen such fear before in D.C. of a man as Trump.
Okay, but wait a minute. So Preston, if these aliens in their deep underground military bases or dumbs have got these massive quantum supercomputers that are bigger than the ones that the humans know about, that are a little bit higher up in the underground bases, wouldn't these, you know, like, how could we stand up against this? I mean, basically, are there, like, a couple of different or many different forces among these aliens?
There is a secret to all this. Mm-hmm. And I've had some contacts with some very strange people over the years, and I mean really strange people.
I believe it.
And I'm not talking, you know, I'm talking about real stuff where there's been witnesses, too. And what I've been told in confidence in the past is that it's like the Wicked Witch of the East. If you throw water on them, they dissolve. There's certain things that make these things go away. And as you know, alien abductions are real. Some of them can walk through the wall or pull three people through the wall up into the mothership and erase their mind and do things to them and whatever, and they'll have flashbacks later. That is all real.
Yeah, that's what I've heard from you know, people who've studied this.
There's over 200, Jacobs. Yeah. There's over 200 documented cases that I know of where people have invoked the name of Jesus Christ, God, or Allah even, mm-hmm. or just God, and they leave. For whatever it is, these things cannot tolerate anything to do with God.
David Jacob says that the one thing that worked most consistently that he's heard of was the Muawiyah Tain, the last two surahs in the Quran that stopped abductions when almost nothing else would.
Well, that's true, but I've also heard Jesus Christ, the blood of Christ, they cannot take it. The cross, it's like a vampire. You hold a cross up, they're gone. So whatever it is, they're frightened of that, you know. That's one secret, is they cannot move. Okay, what I was briefed at one time by somebody that was involved at this at a very high level. What I was told was, this person went right up to the very top of the American intel system, and they told me that, first of all, they were telling me this stuff. I shouldn't talk about it, but if I did, it didn't matter because nobody would believe me anyway, because it's so totally self-discrediting that who's going to believe some
dumb that's lady? The best classification system.
Right. So what I was told was that these creatures at one time in the past came down and took over the world. They were called Dracos to me. They were like the dragon or some serpentine beast. They took over the world, appeared and crushed man with their power, walked around and were, you know, breeding with women and all this. These are male things, whatever they are, and they could breed with Earth women and have hybrid progeny. Called them, they're Nephilim or whatever. Okay. And then what happened is when they walked around, they became so evil that God Almighty eradicated, just came down and destroyed them and told them that, and cursed them to underground, put them underground. So they have underground bases. You know, we have 140 deep underground bases, 1 to 2 miles down. The United States is all connected with high speed trains and whatever. I've talked to people who have been in them. I know they exist. But below that, there's a whole other level where the aliens have the same thing, similar. Did you know that?
That's what I've heard from you and some other sources. Yeah.
Okay. Well, these aliens have been cursed to stay down there, but they can come back up on Earth if they can seduce people one by one by one. They have to gain consent of the people. They can't do anything without consent. So that if we withdraw our consent, they're done.
Well, I hereby withdraw my consent for these demonic forces and hope everybody else does too.
You already have.
Preston James, I appreciate your amazing work. Keep cranking out those great articles at Veterans Today, and I'll look forward to checking back in with you down the line as the Khazarian Mafia continues to crumble.
Keep up the good work, Kevin.
You too. Thanks. That's Preston James. This is Truth Jihad Radio. Kevin Barrett, back next week here.